I can already see how virtual worlds flatten the world, meaning you can have friends in different time zones and different geographies than you would not have easily been able to have historically. I mean, Facebook did that as well, keep in touch with people across vast distances. That breaks down barriers and this perception of I'm in my place and you're in your place and we don't have anything in common, because we can communicate as if, look at us right now. We're having this conversation as though you're sitting in the same room as I am, but you could easily be in a different hemisphere. And so that's where I think the potential for these platforms actually outweighs any potential negative consequences that might occur.
Welcome to the Yale Founders Series, where we bring you in-depth interviews with Yale alumni, founders, and CEOs
to share their insights in developing and scaling avant-garde ideas.
I'm Nathaniel Johnson.
And I'm Yelena Derevyanko.
And we hope to encourage an innovative mindset
by sharing invaluable lessons from our conversations to inspire those who might be dissuaded from pursuing their entrepreneurial dreams. Janine Yorio, co-founder and CEO of EveryRealm, spearheads metaverse real estate innovation through her extensive NFT portfolio and projects like Metajuku and Fantasy Islands. With background in leading real estate fintech app Compound and roles at North Star Capital, Janine brings her expertise to the ever-expanding metaverse landscape, pushing the boundaries of virtual real estate and shaping the future of virtual world experiences. My name is Elena.
I'm Nathaniel Johnson, and we're running the Founder Series here. We talk about entrepreneurs, CEOs, and founders from Yale to talk about their experiences and insights and what it takes to become a successful entrepreneur. So why don't we start off by just, why don't you give us a quick overview of what EveryRealm does? You know, it's kind of a venture capitalist firm, right? We're investing in the metaverse. Can you give us a brief overview of how that all works?
Sure. So EveryRealm is a company that invests in and develops technology for people who love virtual worlds. And that includes everything from immersive media, metaverse, and extended reality. We build infrastructure, and we also build actual social video game experiences.
Okay, cool. Elena and I were just talking about how the transformation of technology is just so crazy, how we started, you know, first from like the first form of text as a form of communication, and then it goes to, pictures.
I was just curious to see, and we're seeing this person-to-person relationship really transform in the way that how we approach it. I'm just curious, how do you think metaverse will transform a human-to-reality relationship and connection?
So I think the word metaverse has been overused over the last couple of years. And let's replace the word with virtual worlds, which is not a new concept. They've been around for a long time. As long as video games have been around, people have been playing in virtual worlds. The difference between where we were 20 years ago and where we are today is that spending massive amounts of time in virtual worlds has become much more mainstream. So instead of it being this fringe thing that a small group of people were doing almost in secret, it's become something that young people, especially children and young adults who grew up playing Roblox and Minecraft and Fortnite, do just in the ordinary course of their day-to-day activity. And that's a sea change from where previous generations have treated social video gaming, such that for many people, their life online is as important as their life offline. And that started before this generation. Instagram created that monster where you curate this vision of your life that you want your friends and followers to see, but it doesn't necessarily bear a lot of relationship to your actual life that you are conducting day to day. It's curated and shown through a lens or a filter. The virtual world is a lot like that, where people are curating parallel lives in video gaming environments that may or may not resemble their real world experience. They might look entirely different. They might inhabit a different body, a different gender. They might do entirely different things in the virtual world, but curating that experience and perpetuating that narrative in that persistent virtual world has become a very important part of their life, one that's inextricably linked to their real life. And that's where things are very different than they have been in previous generations. I grew up playing Nintendo. Yeah. You know, we were all addicted to video games. But when we turned the video game machine off, that was it. I didn't think I was Super Mario or try to tell my friends that, you know, I had this handle that was who I am in a video game life. It was very separate from my real life. And that's what's changed dramatically. And it's a shift that was really catalyzed by the pandemic, where people had no choice, especially young people. They weren't able to see their friends. And so they spent you know, they were spending a few minutes a day playing video games, and then they went to their hours a day and really spending time cultivating online relationships in these games to the point where it's become just a core part of their socialization and how they prefer to spend leisure time. Kids and young adults today, they don't watch network TV. They don't read books generally. I mean, maybe the people that go to Yale do, but most of them are spending a lot less time reading print. They don't listen to the radio. They don't do the things that previous generations did to procrastinate or spend leisure time. They spend that extra time doing two things: watching short form videos like TikTok and YouTube, and was a snowball falling behind me, and playing video games. And so that is the change that we're seeing, and that is fundamentally reshaping a lot of things, including how companies can reach those younger users. That's where they're spending the time. That's where companies are going to have to figure out how to market to younger audiences in those environments.
Yeah, absolutely. And the core of how this generation interacts with internet is so different. And metaverse impacts the gaming space so, so profoundly. But metaverse has so many implications into real life, especially with how people interact, for example, real estate or approaching education. And education hasn't changed since, like, what, 1950s?
Yeah. I mean, even like, I was looking at this company called Spatial, right, which is even like having a transformative nature of where people could go to this virtual art gallery. It was really cool. So in a sense that all these new kind of operations where people communicate and socialize is kind of transforming. But in a sense, do you think that this transformation, this transition may have perhaps be a negative impact on in-person relations as well? I know some people were writing books, you know, talking about the digital age of communication, where it's often hard to kind of draw the line between a virtual connection or a physical one. So in the sense of us transitioning over to that period where these are actual immersive ways to connect with one another when we're not in the same place, would that replace kind of personal or impersonal relations, or would it build on top of that?
I think every generation sees major changes like this happen, and previous generations talk about how it's the end of society as we know it. You know, television was also going to ruin a generation. So was radio. And I'm sure 50 years before that, people were saying, oh, telegrams are going to ruin the world. The fact is there will be good and bad that come from this behavioral shift. I think for some people, it can be really good. There are people that are part of underrepresented groups where they live in a place that they cannot be their self for fear of their own safety. And they can find a safe space to find other like-minded people in virtual worlds. It's also easier to bully people online than it is in real life. So it does cut both ways. A few things. First of all, content moderation has become a big and sophisticated industry as companies have had to figure out how to do it to maintain safe environments for their users. But also, humans are really ingenious. And what I will say, having seen technology evolve over a few decades, never bet against mankind. They will figure out how to fix the hard problems and harness things almost always for good. Not always, but almost always. And I do think that over the long term, these technological changes will make things that we won't even anticipate today better than they are already. I can already see how virtual worlds flatten the world, meaning you can have friends in different time zones and different geographies than you would not have easily been able to have historically. I mean, Facebook did that as well. Mm-hmm. You could keep in touch with people across vast distances. That breaks down barriers and this perception of I'm in my place and you're in your place and we don't have anything in common, because we can communicate as if we're, look at us right now. We're having this conversation as though you're sitting in the same room as I am, but you could easily be in a different hemisphere. And so that's where I think the potential for these platforms actually outweighs any potential negative consequences that might occur.
I mean, there is a big benefit to be able to communicate and at this level and the levels that are coming. In terms of just the metaverse space as well, how would you evaluate, say, you know, what technologies are specifically going to help communication or are going to do well kind of in the future in the investing space?
Yeah, we're really curious how you evaluate potential projects to invest in and what criteria do you use, especially with so many blockchain-based platforms and projects emerging every single day. How do you guys evaluate which ones to invest in or which ones to avoid and not to get caught up in the mainstream and trends?
So first of all, we think of blockchain as a potential infrastructure for the virtual world and not necessarily a must-have. So yes, there are many blockchain-based virtual worlds that have been built, we look at the industry more holistically. And if you're objective about it, the virtual worlds that have the largest user base don't involve crypto at all. Fortnite, Minecraft, Roblox have almost 1 billion active users every single day in the aggregate, whereas the most populous virtual world is Decentraland, which has about 3,000 users a month. So, you know, the crypto thing can be very distracting when what you're trying to figure out is what's really happening in the virtual world. When we look at investment opportunities, we approach the space much as any traditional venture capital investor would. We look for founder market fit. Has this team done something related or similar before? Do we think that this team has unique competitive advantages that other teams competing don't have? Do we think that the business proposition is sufficiently novel? As you pointed out, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of players in the space. And aggregating users at scale is really, really hard because you do have incumbents that have big budgets and already very large user bases. So what is novel about these new platforms that's going to attract users away from those incumbents is a really important problem that we want to hear creative solutions to. I think that the third most important thing that often gets lost in this conversation is that, and I keep harping on this point, these are social video games. Merely making a world that people can explore that has nothing to do in it and doesn't have a game loop with scarcity and an economy is not, it's not enough. If you merely build a blank canvas that people can build things in, we know from experience that people are kind of lazy and they won't do the work. They need there to be some way to climb the ladder, to climb the leaderboard and to earn points. So it has to be a gamified experience. So we look for platforms that are embracing the gamification side of things and that understand that building sticky game mechanics is actually really hard. And ideally, they've done it before in a previous career.
Absolutely. Could you talk a little bit about a particularly successful project that you've been involved in or investment that your company has been involved in?
Sure. So it's still really early. We've been investing for about a year now. So a lot of these companies are still in their infancy and in the seed stage. I think probably the most successful project that we are a part of is, there are a few. The Sandbox is a crypto-based metaverse that has had a lot of early traction, even though they haven't launched yet, because they were very clever about selling land parcels to brands in advance of the game launching. And they've sold, I think, close to $1 billion worth of virtual land on their platform, which means that they've attracted a lot of disparate brands and companies, everybody from Snoop Dogg to The Walking Dead to Hello Kitty, Atari. And I think that has been really interesting to see how brands have basically rushed into this space trying to figure out how they can play this next iteration of virtual worlds. There's some more traditional video games that are built on the blockchain like Shrapnel that also haven't launched yet, but which we're really excited about. Eevee.io, which is a first-person shooter game also built on the blockchain, which is very interesting and has about 600,000 monthly active users, has been interesting. We've also invested in some infrastructure plays that I think are interesting because all of this is predicated upon a series of tools and a tech stack that is evolving. And there are a lot of new iterations that are interesting and that we're seeing permeate the space. What else am I excited about? There are a couple of projects that haven't launched yet, but that are really exciting, that have really experienced teams, some of which we're actually not even at liberty to discuss. But I think the next 2 years are going to be really interesting for this industry because these types of projects take years to develop. I don't know if you know the history of Roblox, but that team was working together since the late 90s. They got together in the early 2000s to build what has subsequently become Roblox under a different name. It took them nearly 20 years to actually get to the point where Roblox is today. So that gives you a sense for how long it takes even an experienced, pre-established development team to build a project that can accommodate UGC content and hundreds of millions of users. So while we're all impatient, we're like, where is this metaverse everybody's talking about? The fact is, these projects take time. And it is technology development with lots of nuances that are complicated to build. And so we have to be a bit patient with the space.
Absolutely. And especially a lot of people are trying to stay up to date with all the emerging technologies. What would you recommend to people who are trying to stay up to date but are afraid that would get caught on trends or something that would just like spike and then just fall?
Remember the NFT trend too as well, right? Everyone was trying to buy, you know, this digital art and there was such a huge craze, but everyone also had a lack of understanding of what even non-fungible token was, right? How can people, these new technologies emerging in this space, how can they kind of keep track of where they can best be most educated on what these things are doing and how they can, you know, stay in tune with what the future brings?
Well, a lot of the communities for these projects coalesce on Discord and Twitter. So I think the best thing to do is not to put real money into it until you understand, join the communities, start learning from other people in the space. I wouldn't tell you that everything you're going to hear on Discord is brilliant or even well-informed, but it's going to at least give you a sense of who is spending their time doing this, and you should be able to view it through your own lens and decide whether you think that these ideas are credible. I think you can learn a lot by spending time on the ground, grassroots, in the Discord communities, and just participating in the conversation, formulating theses, and just floating them to see what people think. I mean, that's a lot of work, but that's how you're going to get the real recon that is different from just the regurgitated propaganda that you're alluding to, you know, that happened during the NFT bubble.
Especially there with a lot of uncertainty already, concerns about privacy, data security, especially addiction to the space raises additional uncertainties for people who are trying to get a sense of what a metaverse is, what the immersive media is. So how would you say EveryRealm plans to address these issues in the long term?
I don't think these issues are novel or unique to this particular space. They're issues that the entire tech industry, from social media to traditional media to video games, are grappling with. So I don't think it's ours alone to bear the burden of figuring these things out. There are many solutions that have been tried and people are still iterating. I also think a lot of the concerns are overstated. I think that journalists like to run with this narrative that the metaverse is unsafe. And the fact is, there aren't a lot of people there anyway. So I don't know that that's necessarily more true there than it is, you know, on a website like Omegle, which isn't a metaverse at all. But if you want to, you know, be accosted by risque or offensive content, you can go there any day of the week and certainly be offended. So it's something that I think is a narrative that people are spending a lot of time on, but in reality isn't a real problem yet in a lot of these platforms. Data security, again, that's true across every single software platform today and not just unique to this space.
And then just to take another direction in terms of the whole social aspect as well of the metaverse. I think even CBS noted that, like, you know, with Meta's whole transition from just being a social space and these applications, they transitioned to the metaverse, and it's got a lot of heat and notoriety in terms of some people arguing that maybe this wasn't the best move.
Absolutely. With these spaces are primarily concerned with how people interact with each other and evolving, considering the needs of people, emerging technology.
100%.
So what would be your commentary on, like, the pivot towards, like, social media, social space in the metaverse?
Just add on to that too. There was this bit of conflict in terms of what's the best application for the metaverse. Like, is it social media, is it not? People are arguing also, if you were for a business like a B2B, that would have more proliferation, right? There's some companies that are having, you know, the first Zoom meetings through, you know, metaverse space, etc. So do you think that social communication is going to be the pivotal movement in the metaverse being introduced to everyone? Or is it maybe going to be another area or niche?
I mean, look, if the metaverse was so great at doing one-on-one meetings, we'd be hosting ours there right now. Right. So I think right then and there, we know that there's some skepticism on both of our parts, and probably this is indicative of how most people feel. My thesis is that the reason why people are going to spend more and more time than they already do in metaverses and virtual worlds is because the game mechanics are so addictive. There are plenty of social media networks and communication platforms that are better at creating point-to-point communication than you can in a virtual world. The reason why kids spend five times as much time in Roblox as they do on Instagram is because it's really fun. The game loops are addictive, and there are network effects. All of their friends are there. So it's the perfect storm of those things that have to happen. I don't think that the business case is going to be the initial use case. That's definitely not where I see things developing. Until bosses get comfortable with employees playing video games at work, I don't think that's going to be the way that this takes hold. I think Zoom works perfectly well for conversations like the one we're having now. And it would be hard to say that doing it in a pixelated version of myself in a virtual world is a better way of conducting a meeting than the way that we're doing it here.
So yeah, just to follow up real quickly on terms of, like, an immersive technology, right? So are you kind of just saying the point of, even though we can enhance the, I guess, experience of, let's say, communication, enhance the experience, social experience, that social experience would be, like, the most indicative or the most prominent thing to be seen in the future?
Absolutely. And building off of that, it's very easy to hop on emerging trends that haven't been previously thought about or talked about or used, but it's very hard to change the established system of how we approach things, for example, education, how we deal with real estate, or any of those really established systems. Do you think, what are the main challenges of using Metaverse to change how we approach those very established systems?
Well, first of all, again, I think when you're saying Metaverse, you mean these new virtual worlds, like the existing virtual worlds, like Roblox. Like, I wouldn't see an opportunity for you to take a doctor's visit or run a class that would be better than doing it through a traditional telehealth portal or a Zoom meeting. The sound quality is not better. Oftentimes it's worse. The interaction, the human interaction and our ability to make eye contact and read body language is not better. It's worse. The thing that's better about virtual worlds is that they're more fun. Mm-hmm. And so the reason why it's going to catch on and that younger people are going to turn into older people who still spend almost unhealthy amounts of time in these spaces is because it's really fun to be there. It's not better than Zoom. It's different than Zoom. But Zoom, like, I'm not earning points while I talk to you, and we're not climbing the leaderboard, and we're not building, you know, our fortress that's going to make us more defensible to our enemy. Like, those things are things people love. People like video games because they are a safe space to make bad decisions. They like a hellscape. They like to do things that you cannot do in the real world without repercussions. And that's what's going to drive people into these spaces, not just the fact that it's 3D or the fact that I can walk around in a pixelated environment. That's not novel. That's not new. That's not enough. The reason why virtual worlds are seductive is because they give you a place to do things that you can't do in the real world. Nobody wants to go to an office in real life, much less in the metaverse. People want to shoot people, blow things up, smuggle things, you know, engage in risque behaviors that are socially unacceptable in the real world. That is what drives this behavior. And that's true even for children. Kids play Fortnite because you can kill your friends. Like, you can't do that in the real world. So, and as much as we like to disparage that behavior, the fact is hundreds of millions of people do it every single day. And so it continues to be popular, and I don't think it's showing any signs of losing popularity.
To go back on that, I think that this whole social space itself, like the gaming and the point system, et cetera, kind of draws someone into the point where they're free to do whatever they want. Very interesting trend that I haven't even noticed in terms of video games, right? People go on to that to play, to do things that they wouldn't normally do.
The world is a safer space than it's ever been, right? Crime is down, harmony is up, and yet humans crave danger. And they want to do things that test their physical limits and test the limits of society. And historically, that's been something you can do in video games. You can feel the adrenaline of jumping off a cliff or jumping across a cliff in a big chasm to try to get to the next level. Those are things you can't do. I mean, unless you're into parkour, you can't do them in the real world. And that idea of the virtual world as a safe space to live out fantasies or overcome fears that you might have is what actually drives this deep-seated human desire to do these things.
So target people's incentives, people's desires to be social, to be fun, and to do something that you wouldn't do in reality. So apart from that, what are something that entrepreneurs that are looking to join the metaverse space within the gaming sphere and the sphere that EveryRealm is, what advice would you give to those entrepreneurs, and what challenges are they facing when appealing to those and to those desires?
What advice would I have? I would say certainly get educated and start to understand the space. Spend time with other people who do spend a lot of time in virtual worlds so you can understand what drives behaviors. Try to figure out what the pain points are and what are the big problems that are universal across the platforms that need to be solved so that you can think about the infrastructure layer, because different platforms are likely to rise and fall in popularity and maybe never even take off ever. But the need for infrastructure and a tech stack to accommodate this new virtual existence is across the board. And that's something that could persist even long after independent platforms go in and out of business. So I think taking a step back and thinking, I think content moderation, which we spoke about earlier, is a real pain point for the industry. And so far, the best way we have to deal with it are humans in call centers actually moderating conversations. And that's incredibly expensive and time consuming. And if you talk to people who do that as a job, it's also very stressful for the people that are on the other end, having to listen to these conversations and figure out where do we cross the line and what is what is bullying and what is hate speech, and having to do that every single day it's a lot. So novel solutions to problems like that, that's just one type of a problem, but that's endemic to the entire industry. So there are a lot of opportunities. I think potentially AI might help to solve some of these problems, but there might be other solutions that we haven't even thought of yet. And that's just one of many. There are in-game economies that require payment, microtransaction platforms. Sound quality is something that I think that's really important. Making the sound sound more like it does in real life. Like, you'll notice if you spend all day on Zoom, your brain actually hurts at the end of the day. That's because the sound quality has packet loss, meaning your brain has to fill in gaps in the sound in order to make it sound like a continuous wavelength. And that's not how it is in the real world. So it's much more fatiguing on your brain. How do we solve problems like that? They can be solved through technology. There are a lot of interesting pieces of the puzzle to be solved here that aren't necessarily as obvious or as outward facing, and they're more of a B2B play.
How do you make sure that the solutions that you're coming up with, that you discover that are needed in the space, are as resilient as possible to disruptors? For example, lockdown, COVID, the chaotic, what is going on in the stock market. How do you ensure that the solutions that you're going to provide, you plan to provide, is stable and resilient to those disruptors?
I don't think any human on the planet can anticipate all of the possible pitfalls in any industry, certainly not this one. But I think thinking about worst case scenarios, entrepreneurs have to be eternal optimists. You have to think about what could be possible if you create something that people want and share it with the world. I don't think that spending time agonizing about what the next equivalent of the pandemic will be is likely to create solutions that are things that people love. So I don't think that's necessarily the right way to approach the problem. If people love what you make, then there will implicitly be some resilience to that product, even in the face of abject circumstances. And I think that's how most entrepreneurs operate. They tend not to be as focused on worst case scenarios as they are on best case outcomes. And they focus on how do you get closer to that goal.
In terms of kind of talking about what entrepreneurs are able to look, you're looking for in terms of investments, is like they're creating these new technologies in the space. In terms of an immersive technology, would you consider then, as we referred back to, with there being some sort of reward system, this system where you can do things that you wouldn't normally be able to do, is that like kind of the unique perspective or value that you look for when you're investing in these companies, or would it also include other factors? And if so, what is kind of the weighing scale you look at before you invest?
There's not like a recipe, you know, if you have this and this and equal parts, then you know, we invest, we look for a holistic picture of something that we feel really strong conviction, where in light of what we understand about the broader competitive landscape, we think that this team and this product or this idea is more likely to succeed.
Just last thing, we always ask all of our speakers that come on,
what advice would you give to aspiring entrepreneurs who are probably dissuaded due to risk and uncertainty and betting everything or most everything on starting something? What advice would you give to those people?
I think that being an entrepreneur isn't for most people, but for the people who are drawn to the space, there's probably no other job that they can stomach. Get some practical experience working for a big company early in your career so that you know what a good functional company looks like, and you can model those behaviors in a smaller, riskier, less process-oriented environment. But if you feel the calling, and usually people who are entrepreneurs have been starting businesses since they were kids, it's not something that you know, generally pick up on later in life, they have this bug, I would say lean into it. It's probably the best, most satisfying ride you can take in life.
All right.
Thanks for the opportunity. I loved it.